ओम अग्नितमिनंदस्य जनार्दनसुकया चक्षुर्सुन्दरचंद्रेन तस्मै श्रीद्रवे नमः श्री चैतन्य मनोविष्टा सचितं देवभूताय सायं रूपप्रदं हरं तदति सापदन्तिकम् पञ्चकोपच्छुद्यश्च त्रिपसिन्धुवैदिकः प्रतीतनं भगवन्तो वैष्णवेन नमो नमः. We're listening to the pastime which is known as Brahma Vimohalila, Vimohanalila, where Lord Brahma, who is a supremely intelligent person in this universe, he becomes bewildered by Krishna. So one of the points that comes out here is that regardless of how intelligent one is, it's not possible to circumvent, go around Krishna's illusory energy. One must necessarily become bewildered by Krishna. So there is a process of removing the bewilderment of Krishna's maya, Krishna's illusion, which covers us in every way, and penetrating into the spiritual world. There is a process, and that process, of course, is bhakti yoga, which ultimately means to evoke the mercy of Krishna. The purpose of bhakti yoga is to purify our consciousness so that we change our stance. Right now we are facing away from Krishna. And when we turn our back to the sun, all we see is shadows, including our own shadow. Similarly, when we turn our back on Krishna, we see a shadow of reality. We don't actually see reality. And we also see only a shadow of ourself. We don't actually see who we are. Because if we ask ourselves, well, who am I? We usually will pull out a mirror and say, well, this is who I am. But if you ask the same person when he's 5 years old and when he's 55 years old, he'll still pull out the mirror, but the two people that he is are completely different. So we know we are someone. Is there anyone here? Raise your hand if you're no one. Okay. Because obviously also you'd have to be someone to raise your hand thinking you're no one. So it gets complicated in that way. Because no one could not raise one's hand. So I'm not convinced if anyone actually thinks they're no one on that, now that I think about it. But everyone knows that we are someone, but who that someone is, we don't actually know. And we are bewildered. So Brahma, who is the most intelligent, he could not pierce through the bewildering power of Krishna. So if the most intelligent, who is so pious and so powerful, cannot pierce, then how will we go around the illusion that we're in? How can we get through maya? And the answer is only by the grace of Krishna. So bhakti, again, is the process of purifying one's consciousness, turning towards Krishna, and developing such a deep desire to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna, to love Krishna, that Krishna is very inclined to give us his mercy, his causeless mercy. We cannot force his mercy, but we can do what we can do from our side to attract his merciful glance. So Brahma at this point in the pastime, when we say pastime, what's the Sanskrit word for pastime?
Leela.
Leela. So what does Leela mean? Pastime. Oh, okay. But what does Leela mean?
Act of the god which attracts the devotees. Something performed by God, that we call Leela.
Yeah, it's like a pastime or an activity, and it's almost like a drama.
Yes.
But except that in Vrindavan, If you perform, act out a drama about Krishna, and you say, oh, we're having a drama, they say, no, no, this is Leela. This is not drama. In other words, drama is very different from Leela, because Krishna actually manifests in the Leela. And in a drama, he won't manifest. Because why does he manifest? Because of the devotion of the players. So here, this is a Leela of Krishna's where he certainly fully manifests. So what has happened up to this point is Brahma, Krishna was performing his cowherd boy pastimes, and he was having a picnic in Brahma with his friends and watching Krishna play like an equal. Just play with his friends, just like they were friends. He wasn't the Supreme Lord, he wasn't wearing a big crown, he wasn't sitting on a throne, none of the boys were bowing to him. So he was walking through the fields of Vrindavan, and then interestingly, when Brahma stole away the boys in caps because he doubted that, how is this possible? Can this little boy, how is it possible that he's my master, the Supreme Lord? Because Brahma's already so powerful, so his master must still be more powerful. So how is his master is unlimitedly powerful, so how can the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Lord be this boy? So through his intelligence, he doubted this. So he wanted to test Krishna. So what he did was stole away first the calves and then the boys. And Krishna was wandering looking for them. And he had some food in his left hand. And it was some rice and some yogurt mixed with fruit. And and one of our acharyas describes that, why did he take that with them? Why did he? Well, he was looking for, first he was looking for the calves. Why did he take this big bowl of rice and yogurt and fruit, and it was sweet? Why did he take it with him? Does anyone know? The answer is because he thought that if I get hungry when I'm looking for the boys, I'll be able to eat some. Now, for us, this sounds so cute at this point. But Brahma, seeing activities like this, the boy is taking some food with him in case he gets hungry, and he's holding it in his left hand even. And he's walking around without shoes. He's just like, he's a village boy. How is it possible? So on one level, we can say it was completely natural that he had this doubt. And then one could also ask, okay, Krishna was thinking that, oh, if I get hungry, I'll have something to eat. But what makes Krishna hungry? He needs food. He's the unlimited Supreme Lord. He needs food, but he actually does need the food cooked by his mother and the mothers of his cowherd boyfriends. He longs to taste that. Asnami paratatmana. Asnami means I will accept it. Bhakti paritam. When it is cooked with devotion. And when even best is if we have a garden and the vegetables are grown with devotion, planted with devotion, grown with devotion, harvested with devotion, carried to the kitchen with devotion, then cooked with devotion, and then finally offered with devotion, then the devotional offering is complete from beginning to end. It's all done for Krishna's pleasure. So in Vrindavan, this is completely natural and spontaneous, that everything is done for Krishna's pleasure. So Krishna wanted to eat the food cooked by his beloved devotees. So when he was wandering around and Brahma had stolen the boys and the cows, Brahma went away for some time. He wanted to see what Krishna would do. How is Krishna going to react to this? I've used my power now, and now let's just wait and see how Krishna reacts. Is he going to exhibit some mystic wonder, you know, some huge form and understand everything? Or is he going to destroy the universe? Or is he going as some pastime, or is he just going to wander around looking for them, or is he going to come to me and say, Brahma, I beg you, please, now your trick is over, now please return the boys. What is he going to do? Or is he not going to do anything? Is he going to become just bewildered? Brahma couldn't see what Krishna was going to do. And he went away. And he went away for a moment of his time, which was a year of earthly time. And he came right back. And why did he come back after a moment of his time? Because time is relative. And the answer is because there was some fear in his heart. So maybe he is my master, this little boy, so I'd better be somewhat careful. He might be the boss. And as we all know, when we're around the boss, we're on our best behavior. So he wasn't exactly on his best behavior, but he came back as quickly as he practically could. And then he saw, or that will come out later, what he saw and how he reacted to it. But what Krishna had done with Brahma at this point in verse 22, he hadn't seen yet because he hadn't come back yet. But what did Krishna do when Brahma took away the boys? Now, it must be said in this regard that Brahma didn't, there are different ways one can look at it, but Brahma couldn't break Krishna's lila because his lila was fully on the spiritual platform, and Brahma had not realized the level of the spiritual platform that the lila had taken place, so he couldn't even enter into it, what to speak of break it. So how did he take away the calves and the boys? Because Krishna wanted to have some fun and some interesting pastime, his internal energy was in charge of constructing these lilas and these pastimes of Krishna's. He arranged that the boys be allowed to be taken away. So it was by Krishna's internal energy that they were actually taken away. But also the acharyas described that there was one set of boys taken away that were actually like a maya set. They weren't exactly, they were like on Brahma's level of the material energy. And then there was another set of boys who Krishna expanded into. And then there was, it appears from what I can understand, from what Krishna was just wandering around looking for the boys and calves, and they were all there, as will be described in a later verse. So it almost appears that there's three different expansions. Almost appears like that. So Brahma had not come back yet, and how did Krishna react to Brahma's trick of taking the boys and the calves? He expanded himself, we read this in the last class, into boys and calves that were exactly equal in all respects except for one. They were exactly equal to Krishna, to the individual cowherd boys. Each one was like, was duplicate cowherd boy, duplicate Sridham, duplicate Sudham, duplicate Stoka Krishna, duplicate calf. Each calf had its individual personality, and each boy similarly was completely copied, expanded into. The expansion of Krishna took on the exact form characteristic, including the stick, including the horn, including the exact dress, including the hands, including the way they have the hair, including their voice. Everything was exactly the same as the original boy, but actually it wasn't the original boy. It was Krishna. Krishna having expanded into them. So when Brahma comes back, he's going to be shocked because he's just taken away all the boys and calves, and then he comes back and he sees the exact boys and calves that he's taken away. So he goes to the cave. He's thinking, or wherever he put them, he's thinking maybe they've escaped from there and come here. And he goes back and they're still there. So he says, maybe they rushed back quickly before I got there or something. So then he's going back and forth trying to understand what's going on, and he gets completely bewildered. But this, so for one whole year, one entire year, Krishna kept this illusion going of that he, the illusion of the cowherd boys and calves was still there. So there are six verses, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, and 27 in the 13th chapter that describe how these expansions of Krishna in the form of the calves and cowherd boys, how they acted. So, 22. So first the boys, they're coming home. We read how Krishna, who had divided himself as different calves and also as different cowherd boys, just this amazing scene. Of course, we can't comprehend it. We can't understand it. We can just perhaps get a glimpse of a shadow of it with our own intelligence or our own vision. But in this most beautiful of all places that's composed of the spiritual energy, every day Krishna would return home with the calves and the boys. And as they would be coming home, it would be the cause, I think the word is used, Nayana Utsava. It was a festival for the eyes of the gopis and also for all the residents of Vrindavan, because they would be coming and the time of day was just at dusk. And according to the Vedic system, the evening, the dusk lasts, I think, 2 hours and 23 minutes. It's very, very exact. When just the sun is starting to go down and it's before it gets dark. And all the boys are starting to come and all the residents of Vrindavan, they're completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. From the moment Krishna leaves to the moment he comes back, they think of nothing other than Krishna. Every resident of Vrindavan, they think of Krishna in one way or another. What's Krishna doing now? I hope he's okay. Maybe he's hungry. Well, sometimes they hear his flute playing in the distance and their hearts, oh, Krishna. And they're just simply meditating on Krishna and they're talking to each other, always about Krishna. And Mother Yashoda is cooking all day long and sending messengers every hour, using the excuse of sending food. She's sending the food, who's, one could say, like a spy, who goes out and then he comes back and she says, what are they doing? Because she just wants to hear about Krishna. And she's in such anxiety, maybe Krishna's going to step on him. Some sharp thorn or some ankur, some pebble or something like that. And just thinking about Krishna. So then when in the distance they see that the dust raised by the hoofs of the cows, the calves when they're coming back, then they immediately, they know that soon the time that have been waiting for is arriving. They have been missing the form of Krishna filling their eyes. Nayana Utsava, because he's a festival for the eyes, because he's so beautiful and he's so captivating. He's so enchanting. He's all attractive. So he who they had been missing the whole time, they know that soon he's going to be coming. So their anticipation, their eagerness to see him just increases and increases, and then he gets closer and they begin to be able to make out the form of the cowherd boys and Krishna, and they hear the sound of the flute, and they hear the cowherd boys singing different songs, poems about Krishna and what he had done during the day, things that they had never heard before, because Krishna every day does such wonderful things. So it's the greatest of festivals. So they come, and that's what's happening. And then in 2020, and then all Krishna were divided, this is 21, who had divided himself as different calves and also as different cowherd boys, entered different cow sheds as the calves. Cow sheds is the calves, and then different homes of different boys. So the cowherd boys and the calves naturally went to their, the calves went to their mothers, and the cowherd boys went into their family's house. But this time, and for the whole year, these weren't ordinary. Of course, the cowherd boys aren't ordinary anyway, but this was Krishna in the form of the cowherd boys. In the exact form of the cowherd boys who was entering. So then the description of... So there's two verses that describe the boys entering. The mothers of the boys, upon hearing the sounds of the flutes and bugles being played by their sons, it was such a festival. Festival, we can't have a quiet festival, especially in India. Especially in Vrindavan. There's a saying in Vrindavan that you can measure the success of a festival by the amount of chaos it creates. So upon hearing the sound of the flutes and the bugles being played by their sons, so they all had, the boys had bugles and flutes and they had their sticks, the mothers of the boys immediately rose from their household tasks. They immediately stopped whatever they were doing. And then the boys entered their house, and the boys were Krishna. But the mothers didn't know. So they stopped what they were doing, and they lifted their boys onto their laps. They embraced them with both arms and began to feed them with their breast milk, which flowed forth because of extreme love specifically for Krishna. Actually, Krishna is everything, but at that time, expressing extreme love and affection, they took special pleasure in feeding Krishna, the Supreme Brahman. And Krishna drank the milk from his respective mothers as if it were a nectarian beverage. It tasted like nectar for Krishna, the most nectarian beverage, because the mothers, they were experiencing love for their own children just like it was love for Krishna. So the love for their own, so they always loved Krishna. And they were always thinking, as Srila Prabhupada's purport will say, I'll read Prabhupada's purport. They were always thinking, oh, when could I take care of Krishna just like Mother Yashoda takes care of Krishna? She feeds him, she dresses him, she cooks with him, she combs his hair. And when he was very young, she would put oil on his body, and then she would put necklaces and jewels on him, and flower garlands and everything. So here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although all the elderly gopis knew that Krishna was the son of Mother Yashoda, they still desired, if Krishna had become my son, I would have also taken care of him like Mother Yashoda. I would love to do all those things for Krishna, because I had so much affection for Krishna. And this again, this defines what Vrindavan is. It's the place where everyone has full, spontaneous, natural love for Krishna. So to be able to serve, because it's not just love. Love means It comes naturally along with service. So therefore, Prabhupada always would translate bhakti as devotional service, not just devotion. Because there's always service attached to affection. So this is how all the ladies in Vrindavan, senior ladies, they wanted to love Krishna, they wanted to love him, just like Mother, love and serve him, just the way Mother Yashoda did. So this was their inner ambition. Now in order to please them, Krishna personally took the role of their sons and fulfilled their desires. So Krishna allowed this pastime to go on for one whole year, so that for one whole year, these mothers who had so much love for Krishna could have Krishna as their son and express their maternal affection. So for one year this occurred. They enhanced their special love for Krishna by embracing him and feeding him. And Krishna tasted their breast milk to be just like a nectarian beverage, because this is their affection. Comes out their affection, their love for their son. Their love for Krishna came out in the form of the milk of their breast. While thus bewildering Brahma, he, Krishna, enjoyed the special transcendental pleasure created by Yogamaya between all of the other mothers and himself. So the mothers loved Krishna so much, and Krishna loved all the mothers so much. Because yayatamam papanyante, Krishna reciprocates. There's one lecture I recently heard where Prabhupada said, how Krishna has such a capacity to love. Because everything Krishna has, he has unlimited beauty, unlimited strength. He's unlimited. And he has unlimited capacity to love. So we have limited capacity to love because we are tiny and insignificant. But Krishna reciprocates with our limited capacity to love him. If we do love him with whatever capacity we have, he reciprocates with that in an unlimited way and fills the devotee's heart, consciousness heart, with unlimited bliss. Because Krishna is unlimited bliss. His body is composed of bliss. So the mothers all had an opportunity to embrace that transcendental body that is composed of bliss. This we can't, obviously we can't conceive of what it would be like to embrace a body that was composed of eternity, Satchidananda Vigraha, eternity, bliss and knowledge, to be reciprocating in love with that transcendental person. So then in 23 there's another verse. So Krishna, they were offering something, their milk to Krishna with so much devotion, and Krishna was accepting it, and it was tasting like the most exceptional nectarian beverage to Krishna, because it was given with devotion. It was liquefied affection, practically speaking, or actually speaking. So the next verse, they embraced him, uttapaya. They stood up, dobi, with their two hands, parirabhya nirvaram. And the boys were announced their presence like they did every day, with blowing the bugles, the horns of the buffaloes, because Krishna had adopted all their characteristics. So the festival culminated when Krishna had entered, and all the mothers reciprocated with him and embraced him and fed him. Thereafter, yes, so it says, Matva Param Brahma Sutam Appayanam. So accepting the milk, the supreme Brahma. Krishna, the supreme Brahma means the greatest, the unlimited supreme Lord who has no need. He needs nothing because there is nothing outside of him. He is everything. So what could there be that he needs? But yet, he desires to accept that which is lovingly offered by his devotees. Although he needs nothing, he desires, and there's a comment that we'll discuss later, that that describes why Krishna does this. We will describe it later. So, thereafter, O Maharaj Prakrit, as required according to the schedule round of his pastimes, Krishna returned in the evening, entered the house of each of the cowherd boys, and engaged exactly like the former boys, thus enlivening their mothers with transcendental pleasure. So we say words like that, enlivening the mothers with transcendental pleasure. We say that 100 times or 1,000 times, and we lose track of what it means. But they were filled with ecstasy. And we say that 1,000 times and 1,000,000 times, and we lose track of what that means. Such happiness, no material, nothing on the material level, not touched by material ignorance, not touched by material passion, not touched by material goodness, but this is actually the true life of the soul. Yeah, this was said by Deham Pritya Ihan Artha. The greatest, that of any embodied soul, the greatest gain is Hitva Dhamma Mayam Svacham. When Akura entered Vrindavan, Srila Sukadeva Goswami points out that he achieved the greatest gain, which there is nothing more to be achieved than what Akura achieved. Because when he gave up all pride, he gave up all fear, he gave up all limitation. Sandeshad yo hariya lingam. From the moment he saw the foot, from the moment he got the order from, of all people, Kamsa, to go to Vrindavan to see Krishna and Balaram, from that moment until the moment he had darshan of the Hari Lingam, the lotus feet of Krishna. Sandeshad yo Hari Lingam Darsanam Shravanadidhi. He engaged in ecstatically in hearing about Krishna, remembering Krishna, thinking about Krishna. And his ecstasy was so great because his consciousness before seeing Krishna was always, he was thinking as he was going on the road to see Krishna, he was thinking, this is the most amazing thing, because on this very day, I'm going to see Krishna. He's my Lord. And I'm actually going to see him. Great demigods, Brahma, Shiva, everyone desires to see Krishna, but no one has the capacity to see him. And I'm going to see his lotus feet on this very day, even though I'm so unqualified. In fact, not only am I unqualified, I'm so sinful. And why am I sinful? Because I'm serving the most sinful person, Kamsa. And in this world, everyone serves sinful people. That's the meaning of what's called having a job. It's hard to conceive of, but even in the West, 200 years ago, there was no such thing. There's no such thing as a job. And no one had to be at work at 9 o'clock. People had their vocations, their occupational duties, but they didn't have jobs like that. Everyone was very close to their land. They didn't have to travel an hour to work or anything like that. Prabhupada, some lecture where Prabhupada tells us some story of how there was once a man who worked in Calcutta. And he lived outside of the city, and he went to Calcutta. He went to his job by train, and it used to take him 2 hours to get there every day, and 2 hours to return, two or 2.5 hours to return. I mean, this happens a lot. And then on the trains, people take that long because the trains are the local trains. So he had a boy, a son. So he would leave before the sun. We could say, if I say before the sun arose, we'll think of, he would leave before the sun arose in the sky. He would leave when it was still dark and while his son was still sleeping. And he'd come back, because it's not like Australia where you have to, where you get off at 5 o'clock. He would work and he would come back late at night. And the boy would always be sleeping. So one day, somehow the boy was up late. And this went on for years, that he'd go on before the boy woke up and come back after the boy was sleeping. So one day he came home and the boy was awake. And the boy looked in and was surprised. Who is this? Who is this man? Prabhupada told that story. So in the coward village, everyone, and for so many, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, people lived close to the land. And the children would go out, and you see this in the villages even today, you know, when the mothers and fathers, they're working something in the land, and the children are right there, you know, they're in the, playing in the dirt of Vrindavan, and they're there, and the food is brought out to them, etc. So Omar's cricket, as required according to the schedule round of his pastimes. In other words, the schedule round of his pastimes means Krishna was acting like he was bringing back the calves. So in that, the calves are very regulated because they get hungry. That's what regulates the cows and the calves and everyone, more or less. We get hungry and then we do things. So then Krishna returned in the evening. He entered the house of each of the cowherd boys and he engaged exactly like the former boys, thus enlivening their mothers with transcendental pleasure. The mothers took care of the boys by massaging them with oil, bathing them, smearing their bodies with sandalwood pulp, decorating them with ornaments, chanting protective mantras, decorating their bodies with tilak, and giving them food. In this way, the mothers serve Krishna personally. So while this was going on, the calves also entered into the calf sheds, the cow sheds. Thereafter, so the boys entered. What did they do to announce that they were coming? And?
Sing songs
and flutes. So,
voices.
Yeah. Sounds like you're an experienced boy.
I don't think so.
A boy used to be, yes, I know. It's true or not?
No, when back when we were young, you know, we go to play and come back, you know, make some noises. So.
Oh, that's what I said. You're experienced. You can put that on your CV.
Now get a job.
You might get a job. That's what we were saying. Maybe jobs aren't as necessary as we think.
I was putting my CV to the spiritual world.
Yes. There you go. Experienced boy. I know how to make noises when I'm coming home. Did you play the bugle?
But we do naughty things, darling. Uh-huh. Everyone does.
Bugles?
Not sure.
You said everyone does. How are you not sure? You're also part of everyone. Do you know how to play a buffalo horn bugle? Well, you better learn. It's not going to look good on your CV if you don't know how to play the bugle.
Maybe I'll learn.
Huh? So, but the Cavs, they also didn't know how to play bugles. So, what did they do? They began mooing loudly. Do you know how to moo? What? Sounds like there's a calf nearby. Thereafter, have you been here the whole time? Have you been here when we were talking about the cowherd boys coming home? Yeah? Okay. Do you know how to play a buffalo horn? Yes? Do you know how to play a flute? Do you know how to make noise when you're coming home? Okay. Do you know how to moo? Like a calf? Could you please moo like a calf again, please? Wow. Like this one has a very good CV already. So they entered their different sheds, and the calves began mooing loudly. Loudly, please. Calling, or the cows began mooing loudly. Are there any cows present? For the calling for their respective calves. When the calves arrived, the mothers began licking the calves' bodies again and again, and profusely, sumptuously, in great quantity, feeding them with the milk flowing from their milk bag. So that implies, Sri Jiva Goswami said, because the calves were Krishna, even more milk was coming out, which means that more affection. There was so much affection. In short, Srila Prabhupada's short purport, all the dealings between the calves and their respective mothers taking care of them were enacted by Krishna himself. Previously, this is text 25, and there's some mysterious things in this. Previously, from the very beginning, the gopis had motherly affection for Krishna. Indeed, their affection for Krishna exceeded even their affection for their own sons. In displaying their affection, they had thus distinguished between Krishna and their sons, but now that distinction disappeared. Okay, who remembers what this verse said? I'll read it again. Please listen carefully. Previously, from the very beginning, the gopis had motherly affection for Krishna. Okay, got it? Indeed, their affection for Krishna exceeded even their affection for their own sons. In displaying their affection, they had thus distinguished between Krishna and their sons, because they had more affection for Krishna than they had for their own sons. But now, the distinction disappeared. The amount of affection that they displayed for their own sons was equal to the amount of affection that they displayed for Krishna, because Krishna had become their son. So then that means, since they had more affection for Krishna than their own sons, their affection for their sons increased, because their sons were now Krishna. Purport. The distinction between one's own son and another's son is not unnatural. Many elderly women have motherly affection for the sons of others. They observe distinctions, however, between those other sons and their own son. But now the elderly gopis could not distinguish between their own sons and Krishna. For since their own sons had been taken by Brahma, Krishna had expanded as their sons. Therefore, their extra affection for the sons, who were now Krishna himself, was due to bewilderment, resembling that of Brahma. Previously, the mothers of Sridham, Subal, Sudham, and Krishna's other friends did not have the same affection for one another's sons, but now the gopis treated all the boys as their own, because they were all Krishna. and they loved Krishna completely, completely and naturally. Sukadev Goswami therefore wanted to explain this increase of affection in terms of Krishna's bewilderment of Brahma, the gopis and the cows and everyone else. We'll read the final verse in this section and then we'll speak a little of that. Now listen carefully to this one too. Although the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, the cowherd men and cowherd women, previously had more affection for Krishna than for their own children, now for 1 year their affection for their own sons continuously increased. Continuously increased, because that's the nature. Anandam Bhudivardhanam. That is, that when dealing with Krishna, there is a continuous increase of affection. So it's not that one achieves a certain level and then it's static and there's no increase. It's unlimited, unlimitedly increasing, and Krishna's unlimitedly increasing. So, now for 1 year, their affection for their own sons continuously increased, for Krishna had now become their sons. And also, as we heard, their affection for everyone else's sons increased to the same level as their own sons, and increased to the same level as their affection for Krishna. But there's more. There was no limit to the increment or the amount of their affection for their sons, who are now Krishna. But every day they found new inspiration for loving their children as much as they love Krishna. Now, what about their relationship with Krishna himself? What do you think?
Did you do need to go and see at Nand Baba's home? Because Krishna was very much present, and I think the subconscious mind identified the Krishna is in form of the child, even if they can't express some conscious
right,
mind.
Right.
So as a result, they don't need to now go and look him outside the home, because he's in very much inside the home.
Yes, that's exactly wrong. Because that's the way one might think. But that would be, oh, who needs Krishna anymore? But because Krishna is the source, was the source and the origin of all these expansions of his, he still was more attractive. He is all attractive. His form is all attractive. Everything about his personality is more attractive. So, as their love for their sons increased to the level of their love for Krishna, their love for Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, increased and increased and increased and increased still more. So that point is specifically mentioned by the Acharyas. What do you think of that?
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. But it's nicer that way too. There's more rasa in that way. Just imagine, though, now we have our sons. Who's this fellow on top of the hill?
We don't need another gram
anymore. Huh? Who needs to go to another gram anymore? So there's much more rasa, there's more taste in the explanations of the Acharya. It's sweeter still that they love their sons as much as Krishna, because everything's always increasing. But still they love Krishna even more. The son of Mother Yashoda. Because no one has a form quite like Krishna's. And because they all have their own personalities, all the cowherd boys and Krishna had adopted the same personalities as the cowherd, but Krishna's personality is the supreme personality. And no one is envious of the fact, in Vrindavan, no one is envious of the fact that Krishna is the all-attractive supreme personality of Godhead, and it's everyone's business to serve him and love him and give everything to him and offer everything to him. No one, that's the spiritual world. The specific characteristic of the spiritual world is that no one is envious or jealous of Krishna. No one minimizes Krishna everyone loves him so much, and everyone acknowledges that he's the center. It's Krishna the center, and that's why we come here to chant Krishna's names and to hear about Krishna, because it's what a soul needs to do, because our natural position is to hear about and glorify Krishna and to love him. So it's, and when we're not doing what we're naturally supposed to do, it's very satisfying. When we're doing something unnatural, it's very unsatisfying. How do you get to work every day?
By truck.
Who drives? Is there traffic?
Yeah.
Is there anxiety?
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. When is there not anxiety?
There is not much traffic.
Okay. When is there not much traffic?
When schools are closed and there's a holiday.
Close all the schools. Try it. Yeah. What to do? Yes, life means.
Trouble.
Yes, so you have to become tolerant. But that's how different it would be if you were just working, if your work was just to go onto the nearby field. There would be no traffic, you wouldn't be angry at the kids, and they make you slow down to 60 kilometers an hour because you're going along trying to get. And then you have to, the lights flash, and you have to slow down, and you don't want to slow down, and you have to slow down. Why do you have to slow down? Because the policemen come and give you trouble if you don't slow down. And but there's so many, and then the petrol prices are always going up, and the car is always breaking down, and on and on and on and on. And the weather is sometimes bad, like tonight. Windshield wipers don't work perfectly. And does that sometimes happen?
Yeah.
And then the windows get foggy. Yeah. Just how different the kind of life that Krishna propagates, his ideal life, his village life. And if you drive all the time, your back will start hurting too, and your shoulders and your neck start. I'm sorry for like having to say all these things, but the ideal life of village life, you work in the fields and you're working with your body. If you go into the park, have you ever been to the park over here, the Whiteman Park?
Yeah.
Did you see these big wheels on the big? So that they used to have horses or oxen. What did they use? Was it horses or oxen?
Oxen.
Pulling the lumber, the wood, because these things are huge. You couldn't imagine a human being having anything to do with these things. It's like it looks like it's made for people, you know, who are twice as big as we are. Did you ever see them? But people, when they worked, you know, and not to sit all day long. So they were healthy, too. Big and strong. So it was Krishna showing the idea. This is the life that he chooses. Because he can do whatever he likes. He's the independent Supreme Lord. So the final verse we'll read. In this way, Lord Sri Krishna, having himself become the cowherd boys and groups of calves, maintained himself by himself. Thus he continued his pastimes both in Vrindavan and in the forest for 1 year. So he's doing that in the forest. And Brahma has them. Purport. Everything was Krishna. The calves, the cowherd boys, and the maintainer himself were all Krishna. In other words, Krishna expanded himself in varieties of calves and cowherd boys and continued his pastimes uninterrupted for 1 year. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's expansion is situated in everyone's heart as the supersoul. Similarly, instead of expanding himself as the supersoul, he expanded himself as a portion of calves and cowherd boys for one continuous year. He did this. Now, what happens next, which we won't read, is quite astounding. There's a little part of the pastime that includes Baladev, Balaram. That's quite wonderful also. But there is one thing I wanted to mention, that there's a comment by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, says that Krishna's love, because the mothers of the boys always loved Krishna. So when Krishna became the cowherd boys, his love for them didn't increase, because they always loved him and as their son, and he always loved them as their mother. And there he, so the one question was asked, well, if Krishna adopted everything about the cowherd boys, the sticks, they look, why didn't he adopt also their mood of loving their mothers? Instead, he kept his own mood of loving them. Is that clear? Srila Sridhar Swami, I may not be able to say it in one sentence. He says it so sweetly. I can't say it as sweetly as he did, but he said there's, but this discrepancy in Krishna, that he's so much controlled by the prema, the love of his devotees. He called it a discrepancy. That the all supreme controller who controls Brahma, Shiva, everything in creation, everything is ultimately under the control of Krishna. That he is under the control of prema, of his devotees. So he said, this discrepancy is the glory of Krishna. And this understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead it puts Krishna consciousness, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, so far above any other understanding, theological understanding of who is God, what is God. That Krishna, he asvatantra, Ivan, Nipa. That Krishna becomes fully dependent on his devotees. Otherwise, one can think, okay, there's a God and he creates us. What kind of God is this? He creates us, that unless we serve him, we can't be happy. So he's created us in such a way that unless we serve him, we can't be happy. And if we do something against that, he punishes us, makes us suffer even more. So it sounds like he's some kind of a dictator of some sort. You know, I've created, unless you serve me, you can't be happy. So you better love me. Do you understand? You must love me or else you're not going to be happy. So of course that can't evoke any love from anyone. But when we understand actually the nature of Krishna, so therefore you can't, practically speaking, not absolutely so, but Krishna consciousness speaks about love of Krishna, but the only other relationship people can have, other religions can have with God is fear.
Yeah.
Fear of him, because if you don't love him, you're going to suffer. Like, yes, I love you, I love you. How many times do I have to say, I love you? I love you, please stop the suffering. And therefore, people want liberation. The goal is liberation, to stop the suffering. But in Krishna consciousness, the goal is not liberation. The goal is just service, loving service. Because they understand the very nature of Krishna. The devotees understand the nature of Krishna. That it is not one-sided. You love me, and if, as soon as you love me and serve me and do what I say, I'll stop the suffering. But it's something completely different. That when the devotee loves Krishna, Krishna becomes completely under the influence of the devotee. He is controlled by their prema. And this so-called discrepancy is the glory, the greatest ornament. Bhaktivatsalya atma prasantavajana, the greatest ornament of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we could say it's what makes him actually lovable. That the reason why he drinks the milk from the mothers is because, and he tastes it as nectarian beverage, he tastes it as nectar because he's tasting their affection. He's controlled by their love for him. It's their love for him, it's their affection that he's tasting. And he's controlled by it, and it's forcing him in one sense to act just like a little boy. So that's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's controlled by love. And he has unlimited capacity to love. And he loves unlimited devotees. Okay, thank you very much. Any questions or comments?
How did Lord Brahma not know that Krishna was God? I mean, Lord Brahma, he said he's made of intelligence, and he knew that, when all the demigods went to Mother Bhumi, Mother Bhumi went, and everyone went to pray to Krishna, pray to Vishnu to help to descend to the material world, and he said, yes, I'll come down. How did Lord Brahma not know all this?
Well, there's two ways to answer. One in a philosophical way. And the philosophical way is that this is exactly what's being shown. That no one can pierce with his great qualification, regardless of how great his qualification is, no one, how great his intelligence, no one can pierce through the Maya, the illusion of Krishna. So he is also bewildered. And then the other part of the answer is that he doubted, how is it possible that this boy is that same Lord? Look how he's acting. He's acting just like a coward boy. And we spoke about this in the previous classes, that he's joking with the boys, they're wrestling with him, he's wrestling with them. He who is Jagyabhuk, who eats the most fine food cooked by the Brahmins and offered in sacrifice according to the rules and regulations, is taking the food that the boys say, oh, this is really good, Krishna. They eat a little bit and they, okay, you can taste this, and they put it in Krishna's mouth and they tease him and they wrestle and they fight, and he cries and they cry and they steal his lunch basket and he steals their lunch basket. So he became bewildered by the leelas of Krishna, especially described by this picnic that they were doing. He became so bewildered that he thought, how is it possible? Let me find out. But we could also ask the question, how do we become bewildered? We know Krishna is, everyone has so much experience, and then doubts come to our mind. So Brahma poked Krishna to see. Let's see if I can evoke some of his power. Inappropriately he did that, but he did it.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions or comments?
You said we have like a limited love for everything, So, in Vrindavan, like gopis and other people have like so much love, and they eager to see when he's going and when he's coming, So how we as a Mayavadi can unlimited love to Krishna?
You're not a Mayavadi.
But how we are?
Yeah, well, this is the process that we're following.
So the devotional service.
Yes, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. The process of devotional service is both the means, the process of attaining it, and then also when one attains it, it's what you do when you attained it. Because we're trying to turn towards Krishna and away from the shadow land of Maya. So we chant, we hear about Krishna. And it begins, a desire gradually and hopefully will come to the heart that, oh, this isn't actually my home. And understanding comes to the heart that no matter what I do in the land of shadows, everything is going to be ultimately no satisfaction here. When we're young, we have so many dreams. When I get this, when I get that, and when I do this. But it all, it's like shadows. You can't, there's no substance. So the material world is insubstantial. So gradually, by our experience, hopefully more by hearing, then we don't have to experience everything. We learn, and then also at the same time, a desire enters the heart that I want to be with Krishna. And that desire to want to be with Krishna in loving service is that which is valuable to be obtained in this life. Yes.
Why did Krishna and the cowboys listen?
Why did they what?
Listen.
Why did they listen?
Because they wanted to show Krishna how strong they were. And Krishna wanted to show them how strong they were. And after, you know that after Krishna killed Kamsa, not after he killed Kamsa, but after he killed Chinora and Mastika, you know how he wrestled with them, right? And then at some point, when all the people were in too much anxiety, Krishna and Balaram threw them down and defeated them in wrestling. And then immediately the band started playing. And the cowherd boys immediately came down from where they were sitting in the stands, and they began to wrestle and beat to the music. And sometimes Krishna would throw them down on the ground, and sometimes they would throw Krishna on the ground. This is just after Krishna had defeated these huge, huge, huge wrestlers. The cowherd boys were defeating Krishna, and Krishna was defeating them, and they were playing and laughing and. Because it's so much fun. Do you like to wrestle?
Yeah.
So? Why wouldn't Krishna like to wrestle? Would you like to wrestle with Krishna? Who would you like to wrestle with? Sri Radha Mahaprabhu? Who would you like to wrestle with? Would you like to wrestle with Chinora and Mastika? Yes! I'm pretty brave. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.